down, strolled along home, and I went to bed. Well, I laid my pistol up under my head.
He strolled along home.
I took my time,
and he went to bed.
Thought I'd sleep some.
Laid his pistol,
big 22,
up under his head.
I keep it handy. Well, early in the morning, about the break of day, I figured it was time to make a getaway. Stepping right along, but I was stepping too slow. Got surrounded by a sheriff down in Mexico.
He was stepping right along.
I were a hot footing it,
but he was stepping too slow.
Was a sultry day.
Got surrounded by a sheriff.
Boxed
in Mexico.
I didn't even have a chance to see the country. When I was arrested, didn't have a dime. The sheriff says, son, you're riding free this time. Where you're going, you don't need a cent. Cause the great state of Texas won't pay your rent.
Cause where you're going,
I think he means jail.
You won't need a cent.
Well, he knows I'm broke.
Cause the great state of Texas,
yippee,
gonna pay your rent.
I'm mighty grateful, fellas. Well, I didn't have a key and I didn't have a file. Naturally, I stayed around until my trial. Judge was an old man, 93, and I didn't like the way the jury looked at me.
Well, the judge was an old man,
too old,
93,
entirely too old. I didn't like the way the jury looked at me. I think they were suspicious.
The judge and the jury, they did agree. They all said murder in the first degree. The judge said, say,
I don't know whether to hang you or not, but this here killing of 50 years is just literally got fun.
You got a point there, Judge. It was a most unsatisfactory trial. They gave me 99 years on the hard rock pile. 99 on the hard rock ground. All I ever did was shoot the deputy down.
99.
It could have been life
on the hard rock pile.
They might have hung me.
And all he ever did was shoot the deputy down.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network, and this is Terrible Tommy. Tom Metzger right here in the bunker right here on a beautiful Friday. Beautiful Freya's Day here in the bunker. The 27th of June, 2014. Hope all you ladies are doing well out there today. You she-wolves, yeah, right. You know, you can get thrown into the Tijuana jail, too, so better watch it. Yeah, you better watch it. We, of course, are at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581, and that's where you send all that cash, check, money order, or PayPal. Right. PayPal's tm_Metzger@yahoo.com. Somebody sent me a PayPal card. For the life of me, I can't quite figure out how to get the cash out of it. It's got a number on it, but I haven't been able to make it work. So I don't know. Maybe somebody out there knows. Maybe the person is out there that sent it to me. It's the same person who was kind enough to send me a Shell card once in a while for some gas. The only problem is now there's no Shell stations in Indiana. And I think, I don't think there's any out there in California anymore either. I'm not sure. I can't believe Shell Oil went out of business. They were about the biggest thing there ever was. Maybe they changed their name and went underground, man. Maybe they became Oily Terrace or Oily Unconventional Warfare Producers. You know, I got a question. You should call into one of these progressive radio shows when you get a chance and ask them this simple question, because they go on and on and on, at least a lot of them do, about how horrible it is. The capitalistas have taken over. We got a fascist government. They're taking all your privileges away, man, and it's really getting bad. And it's turned into a police state, man. It's turning into a police state. But then at the same, out of the other side of their mouth, they say, well, we got to find out where all the guns are and tell the government, and the government's got to know all this stuff and where they are and how many, and a lot of them you can't even have. The logic just doesn't work. If your government's out of line and is becoming a Big Brother government, and Homeland Security is gradually inching towards a police state, why would you want to turn your gun in, or you don't have to turn it in, just record it with the federales? I never understood that. Now, I can understand where progressives say, well, there's too much gun violence. Well, there is. But, of course, where that blame really belongs, should break it down. If you're not going to admit there is anything such as race, well, you're already screwed. If you're going to solve a problem, you got to get all the statistics. Now, where is the majority, the largest percentage of gun violence coming from? What areas of the country is it coming from? What ethnic persuasion is it coming from? And then you could develop programs to logically and reasonably, without disarming the American public and trying to solve a problem. You'll never solve it completely, because people will always be able to get guns or worse. There's a lot of things worse than guns, and of course we're becoming more and more a knife society too. And it don't feel good. Like Charlie Brown's... No, I think it was not Charlie Brown. It was his girlfriend. What's her name? Anyhow, she says, just remember something, Charlie. Pain hurts. If somebody sneaks up behind you and sticks a knife in your back and hits the right spot, you're just as dead as being shot with a gun. But I hardly ever hear progressives talking about knives. That's odd, isn't it? But I don't see why we can't agree on part of it. Say, sure, there's too much gun violence. There's too much automobile violence. There's too much of a lot of violence. But if we use logic, we'll say, well, let's isolate the problem. Now, I'll tell the progressives this. If you can guarantee me that there won't be a police state and they will not invade our homes to disarm us or put us in concentration camps or whatever, if you can guarantee me the most powerful military-industrial complex in the world with thousands and thousands and thousands of soldiers, sailors, Marines, and Air Force, all armed to the teeth with atomic bombs, too, and missiles all over the place, in a position to grab you any time of the day and night, if you can guarantee me that that can't happen, that the government won't go rogue, well, it's already gone rogue. There's no doubt about that. It's just that they're killing other people. They know as long as they occupy and kill people in other countries, half of the people in this country are going to say, well, that's okay, he's a bad guy, you know. But when they start doing it in this country, what you going to do? So, anyhow, Mr. Liberal Man, we can agree with you on some things, but we're not going to agree with you on the core things. Now they've come out, and I think I said yesterday that I guess they're trying to get a law through that if you're a stalker and you're a convicted stalker, you can't have a weapon. You can't have a gun. And the NRA is fighting it. Well, I can sort of understand a little bit of that, because what degree of stalkering? I mean, you know, is it high-rise stalking? Is it middle stalking? Or is it light stalking? I mean, is somebody that just follows a good-looking girl down the street for a ways and wants to get a good view of her caboose. Is that a crime? Well, I don't think so. But then there's a medium stalking with a guy or gal. I've been stalked. I was stalked for several years by a girl, a woman, a nut. But she never tried to attack me with a weapon or anything like that. But unless somebody has been convicted of violent stalking and convicted that way, it would seem to me they still should maintain the privilege of having a defensive weapon in their house. That seems logical to me, but the progressives are going crazy. But of course, anytime they can suggest taking a gun away from anybody, they want to do it. But it doesn't make sense. It's like Jews who've been in a concentration camp and a whole bunch of their family were killed by guns and so forth. And then they come out and say they want everybody disarmed. I've never understood that logic among Jews. The paranoia I would be under after escaping death or having a lot of friends and family killed in the camps, I'd want to be armed to the teeth all the time. I'd want anything I could get. The most meanest, toughest, most powerful gun I could get around. I just don't understand it, why a lot of people that you'd think would want more guns than anybody else would quietly do it all over again. Hey, Jaime, you're going with us. Who are you? I'm with the SS. I'm with the KGB. No, I'm KGB. Well, could be KGB. I'm with the Gestapo. You go with me. Well, it's too bad. I haven't got a gun or I'd shoot you. Yeah, that's right. You don't have a gun, stupid. Get in the truck. Get in the car. You're gone. Yeah. Oh, man. I like to try to use logic. And if you catch me using false logic, let me know. Because I always like to be using it as much as possible. Anyhow, ask your... They don't even have to be call themselves progressives, because I get so sick and tired of hearing these guys on the radio. Immediately, it's right-wing bad, left-wing good, left-wing good, right-wing bad. They should make a rule not to use the term left and right when there's a debate or discussion, and just talk and suggest solving a problem. The minute you rise up, it's like saying, he's a neo-Nazi. Well, this discussion's over. There's no discussion after that. Even though, wait a minute, what's a neo-Nazi? I've known neo-Nazis, but I really don't know any neo-Nazis either. I know National Socialists, or I know racial separatists, or I know Republicans, I know Democrats. I don't know what a neo-Nazi is. And they don't really adequately explain it, but they use it as a pejorative term just to knock off debate. No discussion after that once they've alleged, you're a neo-Nazi. I get it around here. Sometimes people write into the paper and say, Metzger's a neo-Nazi, or he's a socialist, or he's this or that. Well, I tend to be what I am, and I don't usually put too many labels on myself. Well, Mr. Maliki over there in Iraq, he's he's in a bad situation. Just like all the puppets that this government set up in the past, from Noriega to the guys down there in Vietnam that they set up for the leadership, and Central America, now all over the Middle East. Don't these guys realize when they're done with them, they're going to get it in the head or get it in the butt? Malachi's through. It's going to be like a lot of these other people from, Soviet Union and all over the place. They bailed out and came to the United States. Now they're teaching classes down at the universities, War College and so forth. I just heard yesterday one of the big shots in the Soviet Union came over here. And he's a lecturer, making all kinds of money at a university. So the United States bails these people out. You know, they bailed Batista out. Remember him? Yeah. Castro run him out. He deserved to be taken out, as most of these leaders do. But do you have a pool going on when Malachi gets it? Or whether they're going to move him to Miami Beach? Come on, you insurgents over there. Take Baghdad. That'll be funny as hell. Well, we haven't run anything from Mad Mike lately. That rogue progressive. You don't like right-wingers. Well, I don't either. You don't like racists. Oh, that's okay. But some of the other stuff he does pretty good on, so we'll see what the hell he's up to today. You know, I probably would put some of these right-wingers on, but I'm sorry. Most of them got nothing to say that I'm interested in. Oh, yeah, they can go on and on about the nigga. N-word. And go on about Jaime, choo-choo-choo-choo. Jews cause everything. The weather's changing. It's a goddamn Jews. Yeah, okay. And they go on and on about things that happened 8,000 years ago. They know all about it. They know everything about history. But you know, I find a lot of them don't know shit from Shinola. But they get a little club around them and tell them how intellectually they are, and there you go. So anyhow, let's listen to old Wild Man Mike here for a minute. He's always pissed off about something. I like pissed off people. I like people who get pissed off and cuss and spit and the whole bit and kick the damn drywall in and the whole bit. I don't know why. Does that make me weird? Maybe.
Christopher Dodd and Barney Frank, about 4 years ago, introduced and got passed the so-called Dodd-Frank financial reform law that deals with derivatives in an attempt to reel in the predatory capitalists who are devouring the country and don't give a goddamn whether or not the country falls again. They don't care financially. As a matter of fact, that's how they make a lot of money, when they destroy things. And so this Dodd-Frank reform law was passed. The derivatives were, we'd have to get Prairie 2 in on this discussion, because this is where it gets way beyond my ability to fully understand. But it was the derivative instrument that was at the heart of that 2008 meltdown, when the Bush crime family and its cohorts in the financial services industry and the banking industry decided the time was right to absolutely make a killing, in some cases literally, steal everything they could steal from the rest of us. And the 1% got fabulously wealthy on what happened next, while millions of Americans were thrown out of their homes and lost everything. And why that didn't trigger a complete revolution, I will never understand. it was very clear what was happening, that the 1% or even the one half of 1% were consciously and deliberate, had consciously and deliberately structured the financial industry in this country and everything that depended on it, which is damn near everything, in such a way as to set up the American public, millions of us, for a horrific fall into a financial abyss that, that most people who fell did not recover yet and probably never will. So this is thanks to Bill Clinton, you know, when the Glass-Steagall Act was signed into law back in the 30s to prevent it from another Great Depression. And Clinton, of course, destroyed that thanks to a couple of filthy, stinking Republicans, but including Clinton. But anyway, without getting into a great long history and discussion, which I'm not capable of, about all that financial stuff, it was very clear that the American people had been set up to be the victims of a massive fraud and a massive theft. And when I say massive, I mean it meant that kids couldn't go to college, that businesses, people wanted to start businesses, no longer could. Homes were lost to foreclosure. Apartments were lost because the people in the apartment buildings went into foreclosure and the tenants had to move. The cars were repossessed. Retirement funds disappeared. It was something that should have triggered a massive response from the American public. And the financial murderers who did this paid very close attention, and what they noticed was nobody did anything. The American sheeple took it. Nobody organized massive protests, I mean, that were effective. Nobody took pointed out the necessity to put 20, 30, 40, 50 million people in the street and to bring down the capitalist system once and for all. Nothing. So what was the lesson learned by the pigs who did this? That they can do it with impunity. If they were able to do what they did in 2008, what the next wave will do will be basically the same thing, and even more people will fall into that financial abyss. And the pigs know that even the next time, nothing will happen. What is it about us? You know, they raise the price of car fare for a subway in South American countries, and the people go on rampaging strikes. In France, if the price of gasoline or diesel goes up 15 cents when it's only supposed to go up 3 cents, there are massive strikes that bring the countries, these countries, to an absolute standstill until the government says, okay, we won't do it. What is it about us? We are religious psychopaths. We are amosexuals. We are gun nuts. We are a stupid people. Maybe that's the answer. We are becoming noticed by the rest of the world for the fact that we reject science. We reject it. We are being noticed by the rest of the world that even though 98% of climatologists say we're facing global warming disaster, the people in this country will drift towards the 2% who are frauds and say, well, you know, there's the other side of the story. What is it about us? I mean, I used to think that Americans, and maybe this is true at one time, that Americans were on the cutting edge of leadership and innovation and, yes, murder and mayhem and conquest and imperialism. Yeah. I'm talking about here at home, that we were a country that was interested in education. We were interested in providing for those among us who simply can't, for whatever reason, sustain themselves, sustenance that is necessary just to stay alive, that we were a country that would promote the idea of small businesses. We were a country that would promote the idea of pay your taxes, everybody, on April 15th, just pay your damn taxes. Just pay it. That's the problem. You know, these right-wing bastards always talk about freedom isn't free. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. Because what they're talking about is you're supposed to get a gun and go kill somebody. No, no. Freedom isn't free. You have to pay. You have to support your form of government with your taxes. And these whiny-ass bastards who constantly have pulled that idea down. No, no, you don't have to pay taxes. But if you don't have taxes, you're not going to have roads and bridges and schools and safe airline travel and dams that hold back and firefighters and smoke jumpers. And I mean, just pick something. And if you don't have taxes, you're not going to have it. Whether it's federal or state or county or local or your city or your neighborhood, doesn't make any difference. Who in the hell do these people think is going to pay for all this? Which leads me up to what the U.S. House of Representatives did today, yesterday. They passed a financial deregulation package that would benefit, according to Huffington Post, I love how they put this, that would benefit the Koch brothers and the nation's largest banks. A financial deregulation. As if there are regulations on now that prevent this predatory insanity, there might be two or three, and the Koch brothers and the 0.1% and the banking industry went to their little goddamn pimps or whores in Congress, if they're whores, no offense to real sex workers, and they said, this is why we put you in office. Get this goddamn thing passed. And so they did by a vote of 265 to 143. The legislation will significantly weaken elements of the Dodd-Frank financial reform law dealing with derivatives. The bill includes several separate deregulatory measures sought by the largest Wall Street banks and the Koch brothers, who control significant financial and energy derivatives operations. This is who your Congress works for. Are you so stupid? Are you so ignorant that you really think the Congress of the United States, the House and the Senate work for you? It's comprised mostly of millionaires to begin with. Jesus, God. I mean, what's it going to take? I'll tell you what it's going to take, I think. It's going to take Republican control of all three branches of government. And that probably isn't too far away. And maybe at that point, when these predatory sons of bitches really, really break out of the box and the American people see what has been building for the past 35 years and what is now facing them, the absolute destruction and theft of everything that Americans thought they had worked for and earned and accumulated and lived a decent life, paid their taxes, all of that is going to be washed away. Do you think at that point the American people will finally say, we've had enough, and put an end to it? Do you? I mean, do you think then it'll happen? I have my doubts.
Remember yesterday when I told you the Gary Oldman story, the Hollywood actor who gave the Jews hell big time in an interview for Playboy? Well, I knew it would happen. He appeared on Kimmel last night. Let me play this back for you.
Thank you. thank you for coming. I know you've had a very unpleasant day today, and I think a lot of people expected that you would cancel on us, and I appreciate that you did not cancel on us and that you came here tonight.
Yeah.
You had a lot of apologizing that you did today because of a Playboy magazine article, an interview that you did with Playboy.
Yeah, it was an article I did with Playboy, and I said some things that were poorly considered.
Yes.
And once I had seen it in print, I could see that it was offensive, insensitive, pernicious, and ill-informed. And, well, you know, words have meaning. They carry weight, and they carry on long after you've said them. And I don't condone or excuse the words I used in any context. I just basically shouldn't have used them in any context. But I did, and I have deeply injured and wounded a great many people. So I just want to. I appreciate you having me here and extending your hospitality to, you know, put me in the seat once again. And it gives me the opportunity to say to those people that I, from my heart, I am profoundly sorry and deeply apologetic, you know, especially to the fans. Because they've been so incredible to me and very loyal. My nickname is like their Team Oldman, and I really feel that I let them down. You know that I, especially to the younger fans. You know, I should be, I'm a public figure. I should be an example and an inspiration, and I'm an a-hole, and I'm 56, and I should know better. So to them, I also say that I extend my apology and my love and best wishes to my fan base.
I'm stuck on the fact that you call your fans Team Oldman.
Well, they've been pretty loyal.
Can I be very honest with you?
Yeah.
I know I shouldn't, but I'm so happy that someone has to apologize on this show, and it's not me for once. That is. So thank you.
Thank you. I mean, have you ever been in a?
Oh yeah, I do stupid things all the time, and then I have to. But you know, I think it's important when somebody apologizes to accept their apology. I mean, you know, like some people, nothing is ever enough, and there's no end to it, and you could go on forever. For some people, but I mean, it's obvious. Well, I guess I don't know. Maybe, you know, you are a great actor, so we cannot trust anything you say.
Oh no, trust me.
Okay, all right. So this is, I mean, this sort of thing. I think we now see it over and over again, and you know, where you have to go on TV and apologize for something, but sometimes you get caught up and you start talking, and then.
Well, I just think that you. We're public figures, and I think sometimes we're looked upon as we're asked to be social or cultural or political commentators, and I can't speak for other people, but I'm not, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And I stepped out of my area of expertise, and I just landed both feet in a hornet's nest.
Yet, in general, they say defending Mel Gibson is not a good thing to do in any way. I think I understand what you're trying to get at, though. You're talking about people being hypocrites. People love to jump up on their soapbox and take shots at people for saying something. When you know a lot of those people are saying, not all of them certainly, but a lot of them are. Yeah.
Not all of them, and it just came over in a certain way, and for that I'm deeply sorry.
Well, let me make the most awkward transition possible and say, are you excited about Planet of the Apes? planet of apes.
No, I assure it. No, I only ever wanted to talk about Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
You know, and this thing, this news cycle, this event has, I think, sadly, it derailed what my initial purpose was.
It's not fair to the apes.
It really isn't
fair to the apes. Yeah,
they're furious.
And all the people you work on the movie with
exactly.
too. Yeah, obviously.
So you've got these great people at Fox. You've got Matt Reeves, who's this incredible, you know, this amazing director. The return of Andy Serkis as Caesar, and we have Kerry Russell, Jason Clarke. We've got some fantastic actors, so believe me, it's a relief to actually. I desperately want to talk about Planet of the Apes.
Okay.
Well, there you go. There you go, another Jew ass kisser that's groveling, attempting to save his career. Too bad. I liked him as an actor. But remember, actors are just actors. For the most part, they're a bunch of cowards and cheats and reprobates, drug addicts, pedophiles, and everything else. Because they get enough money, then they can sort of insulate themselves from a lot of things. So the trouble is, Americans... especially white people worship these actors like they're some kind of monarchy. And so, but anyhow, that's unfortunately, that's a very, but we could have bet it was going to happen. Yesterday, when I gave you that information, you can bet it was going to happen. His manager and his publicist and, he just finished that new movie about Planet of the Apes, Planet of the Niggers. He should say that if he wants to really get him going. And then he had the audacity to defend Mel Gibson. Jeez. Oh, and they all call up the Anti-Defecation League, you know, and apologize. I figure the Anti-Defecation League, if they apologize enough and give them enough money, they'll take care of the problem. It's a shakedown racket. It's been a shakedown racket for decades, probably hundreds of years. It's a shakedown racket, pure and simple. Well, what do we have here? Vatican diplomat Joseph Wesolowski, convicted of sexual abuse, defrocked from the priesthood. Vatican City Archbishop Joseph Wesolowski was removed from his post in the Dominican Republic and recalled to the Vatican last August amid claims he had abused boys in Santo Domingo. Well, there's another one for you. Well, here's an article from our opposition, I guess. In an effort to gain converts, the dwindling German neo-Nazi movement has been trying to appeal to young people. They're putting out viral videos appropriating hipster fashion and even staging hip-hop concerts, reports a recent Rolling Stones profile, by increasingly trying to absorb themselves into the German youth culture. They want skinny jeans and Converse their way into the hearts and minds of the country's impressionable 13-year-olds. Well, that sounds smart to me. All the while concealing their message of anti-immigrant hate, or at least making it less obvious. Go look at the Nipster tag on the Instagram and prepare to be horrified. Let me see here. There's more to this. In addition to dressing like Williamsburg hipsters from a decade ago, they're starting their own clothing labels and blazing shirts with logos like 88, which replaces Heil Hitler because H is the eighth letter of the alphabet. Gone is the once ubiquitous skinhead of the 1990s with his shaved head and combat boots and bomber jacket. The article compares one of the late 20s Nazis they interviewed wearing a gingham shirt to a character on Silicon Valley. There's a new relaxed approach that portrays itself inclusive, except for the fact that it excludes almost everybody in the whole world. Activists and academics are trying to prevent kids from being swallowed up by the movement are understandably pissed off. You can't tell what a neo-Nazi looks like anymore. Oh, lone wolves, which makes it easier for them to commit violent acts. Cynthia Miller Idris, a professor at American University who researches school children in Berlin who are at risk for joining far-right parties, tells the Rolling Stone that it's now harder than ever to identify a neo-Nazi. I wonder if we had anything to do with that. If you're a teacher, she says, you used to be able to identify a skinhead in your class, and you could think of ways to intervene. But now it's harder to mainstream society to understand who these young people are and how to engage them. Wow. Trends and subcultures spread across borders all the time, and it makes sense to use signifiers your audience is familiar with when trying to introduce them to something new. But in this case, a bunch of blank blank are using music and fashion to lure aimless kids into a dangerous doctrine. Let's see here. I don't know whether there's anything on this deal or not here. Let me put this on pause. One of the most prophetic events of 2014 happened late May. It was Pope Francis' visit to Jerusalem, May 24th through the 26th. The news media failed to recognize its significance, though most people are unaware of it. This visit was extremely momentous. It shed light on the future of Europe and of the world, and showed us where we are in Bible prophecy. This must be put out by some preacher. The Pope's visit took place amid some very disturbing acts of anti-Judaism in Europe. The day he arrived, four people, two of them Jews, were shot to death in a museum in Brussels. Hours later, two brothers were beaten badly as they left a synagogue in Paris. And these attacks came just after the European Parliament elections, when Europeans alarmed people by electing many far-right members, and even some neo-Nazis. Some commentators talked about these elections in terms of the Fourth Reich in Germany, and the neo-Nazi National Democratic Party won 1% of the vote and will send a man who called Adolf Hitler, quote, a great man, unquote, to the European Parliament. France elected the daughter of a convicted Holocaust denier and racist, even though many feel that she thinks very much like her father. Israeli Knesset member Dov Lipman warned, quote, make no mistake about it, there is a direct connection between the way European leaders speak about Israel and the rise of anti-Judaism. On May 22nd or 26th, the World Jewish Congress released this statement about Europe's rising political extremism as relevant in the election results. Quote, the future of European Jewry is at stake, unquote. You can read more about this trend in our article on page 7. Well, I'm not going to stick around for page 7. During his visit to Israel, the Pope addressed the murderers and said he was sorry that things like this are happening. The Times of Israel also said he also discussed the election. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu Nitwit and Foreign Minister Avigdor Lieberman said these events are happening because of the noxious anti-Jewish sentiments and statements spread all over Europe. Many Jewish leaders are expressing shock and rage because of this trend in Europe. People looking only at the surface would view the Pope's visit as a sign of his support of Israel. But if you look closely at what the Pope said and did in Jerusalem, you can see how, in reality, he is much more closely connected with the anti-Jewish attitudes simmering in Europe. Oh, my goodness. Is there any more to this? Oh, I don't know. There's a whole bunch of stuff here. Typical preacher stuff, though. Typical preacher stuff.
No matter where you make something, it costs the same once it gets imported in the United States. That was put into place in 1793 by George Washington and stood until the Reagan administration. And that's why we used to make things in the United States. The average tariff from 1793 to 1980 was around 33-34%. It got as high as 35-36% during World War II. It had at various times been as low as 29%, but it was always in that range. The tariff, the average tariff, import tariff right now on U.S. on goods made overseas and brought in the United States is 2%. That's why companies are leaving the United States to manufacture things overseas. So I would just abandon all of these insane trade policies, and I would go back to what Alexander Hamilton proposed and George Washington put into place, and every president of the United States until Ronald Reagan supported, and that is a tariff-based trade policy, which is, in effect, what is being done by China, South Korea, Japan, Taiwan, Germany, many of the EU countries. They just do it with the value-added tax, which is functions as a tariff, and that's a whole other rant. So I'm not so worried about enticing foreign corporations to invest in the United States. I'd like American corporations to start bringing their factories back to the United States. And if they're not willing to, you know, just get the hell out of business and let some other American entrepreneurs start making things in the United States. Nick, thanks a lot for the...
In Bremerton, Washington. Now, we mentioned... I don't know if yesterday or last Thursday, about the collapse of the Western Antarctic ice sheet. And the fact that it has begun, scientists are saying. And there are two separate scientific studies now confirm that the loss of ice sheet is inevitable, although that will take some time. But it will cause up to 4 meters of additional sea level rise. Think about it. 4 meters is what? 8 feet, roughly? 8.5 feet? And in The Guardian yesterday, a piece by Suzanne Goldenberg that bears some repetition on this program. The first, her opening sentence is scary enough. The collapse of the Western Antarctica ice sheet is already underway and is unstoppable, two separate teams of scientists said on Monday. The glacier's retreat is being driven by climate change and is already causing sea level rise at a much faster rate than scientists had anticipated. The loss of the entire Western Antarctic ice sheet could eventually cause up to 4 meters, 13 feet of sea level rise. What did I say? 8, 9? Devastating low-lying and coastal areas around the world. But the researchers said that even though such a rise could not be stopped, it is still a couple of hundred years off. More on this when we come back.
Well, let's close out with some reading from the good book, Might is Right. This has a little bit to do. We're talking about the Declaration of Independence. Even the giddy doctrinaire who so cunningly concocted the bombasto-furioso fictions of the Declaration of Independence could not apparently have believed them himself. He was not a slave driver residing among slave drivers who bought and... Oh, I'm sorry. Was he not a slave driver residing among slave drivers who bought and auctioned human cattle for dollars and cents all the days of his life? No doubt for purposes of statecraft and necessary warcraft, he wove his philosophic preamble of strong deceit. Well, we know now why he did put together the Declaration of Independence. He was appealing to the crazy-ass French who were in their liberty, equality, fraternity, and all of that communard stuff. He wanted to get weapons from the French, so he wrote that up as an act of war to get weapons simply to fight the British. Anyhow, probably also he was comparatively honest and even sincere, but among the alluring priests of unreason, the most dangerous is the fanatical propagandist. When Jefferson dictated his fatal, untenable abstractions, he was not even original, but plagiarized Zeno the Stoic, Jack Cade, Savonarola, Milton, Plato, John Ball, and so forth. Zeno said, "All men are by nature equal, but carefully refrain from attempting to demonstrate it." Milton defended it in his prose essays. Plato voiced it in his Republic. John Ball preached it in medieval England. Savonarola perished trying to establish it in Florence. Jack Cade, Robespierre, and Christ were also failures, ghastly failures. "If human experience proves anything at all," writes Fitz James Stevens, "it proves that if the restraints are minimized, if the largest possible measure of liberty is accorded to all human beings, the result will not be equality but inequality, reproducing itself in a geometric ratio," unquote. Remove the restraints and see how quickly an aristocracy based on merit would mow down an aristocracy based on credit. In actual life, he who claims equality with another is ever called upon to prove his claim, not by a grotesque abacadabra of silly phrases parroted from antique philosopher or blue moldy documents, but by actual deeds, that is to say, by producing his credentials. Constitutional theories are all very well to humbug stridulating slaves, but in a free man's household or business, they are not legal tender. Among men of affairs, natural egalitarianism is regarded as amusing moonshine, mere spread of egalism, fit for public meetings only. Business minds thoroughly understand, having learned by bitter experience, that some men are destined by nature to bear command, and some to obey, even for 1,000 years before their birth. No one can study the laborers on a farm, the hands in a big foundry or a factory, the seamen in a large seaport, the nomadic hirelings on a railroad construction gang, or the clerks and salesmen in a city warehouse without perceiving at a glance that the vast majority of them are extremely poor specimens of humanity. The ideal type of manhood and womanhood, that is to say, yea, thoroughbred, is not to be found among these captive hordes, for captives they really are. Their heads are, to a large extent, unsymmetrical, their features distorted, ape-like, unintelligent, their bodies are out of all proportion, dwarfed, stunted, diseased, malformed, cretinous. The movements are contracted artificially, ungainly, and their minds outside of routine are utter vacuums. When compared with the traditional idea of strength, beauty, courage, and nobleness of character, they are an extremely ill-bred herd of cattle, exhibiting all the psychological stigmata of inherited rain rot and of physical decay. Quote, "A crown of thorns on every brow, that is the wage they're earning now," unquote. 9/10 of them are positively repulsive in language, mentality, and general appearance. They even display an extraordinary low average of animality, and upon the slightest exposure perish off, like sheep that have the lungworm. Heated rooms, woolen clothes, stimulating beverages are the means whereby their watery blood is kept in languid circulation. Every new generation is feebler and more debased than its predecessor. All the scientific evidence of mental, moral, and bodily deterioration are markedly accentuated in them, and their timidity is proverbial. Hard, continuous, methodical labor destroys courage, saps vitality, and demoralizes character. It tames and subdues men just as it tames and subdues the wild steer or the young colt. Men who labor hard and continuously have no power to think. It requires all their vital forces to keep their muscles in trim. Indeed, the civilized city of working men and working women are the lowest and worst type of animal ever evolved from the dust and slime and oxygen. They actually worship work, bow down before law, as the ox team crouches and strains under the lash. Look upon their shrunken cheeks, their thin lips, their narrow and retreating irresolute jaws, their decayed teeth, sharp puny noses, small watery eyes, yellow bloodless complexions, bent shoulders, dry hair tending to baldness, struggling thin beard, the women with pinched features, waspish, fragile waist, want of bust development, consumptive, neurotic, artificially barren, emancipated, hungry, dwarfed, hysterical. The minds of the average working man and woman are either total vacuums or stuffed to the brim with every inconceivable species of lies, iniquity, superstition, and sham. Indeed, how could they remain in such condition of base, loathsome, hirelingsome, when they are not deficient in all primitive virtues and all that is manly and womanly? Behold, upon their brow is stamped with the red-hot cattle brand the word damned. Eternally tortured are they in a patent purgatory invented by politicians. Their tribulations, however, may really be but progression in disguise, because their shameful self-degradation must ultimately end in their utter extinguishment. Hopelessly, they are entangled in the snare, hopelessly defeated. For them, there is no escape, no, not even through fields of blood. Poor, trembling wretches, washing their own hands in their own sweat, nay, in their own hearts of blood. Born thralls are they, or born madmen. Their days are without hope, and their years are consumed for naught. When their masters speak unto them, there is a trembling in all their joints. They waste their lives pursuing shadows, and for hire build their own tombs. Their minds are below freezing point, nay, below zero. Crippled souls are they. They knead their own flesh into daily bread and transmute their contrite hearts into basins of gruel. They look into idols for deliverance, and grind their dry bones into baskets of coal. At thoughts of battle, they blench with terror. A sight of naked bayonets, they run like whipped hounds. Therefore, strength leapeth down upon them as the panther leaps upon his quarry, and in a moment of time they are blotted out. My soul abhorreth them as an abomination. My hand reaches out to clutch them by the throat. Heredity is ever so much more to do with social condition than the majority of modern men are willing to admit. Judging by results, the nations ignore birth and breeding at their own peril. For just as there are noble animals, there are noble men. If a stock grazer throws down his dividing fences and permits all his cattle to mix up for... Well, I did it again. I run out of tape. 14-5. I'll see you tomorrow. Saturn's Day. 14-5 and shut up.